Welcome back to the Sip and Feast podcast, episode number 45, The Power of Eating with Loved Ones. This is such a great idea, Tara. Who would think that we should eat with loved ones? We should eat with our enemies.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, it's something that we as humans have been doing for millennia, right? And it's something, I want to be more specific here. It's really the power of eating dinner with loved ones, eating with our family, eating with your spouse. If you're living alone, you can FaceTime a family member if you want to, if you can. So this isn't just for people who are in a family of four like we are. There are ways that you can do that. But I'm going to get into like some of the science-y aspects of it. And this is all from a podcast that I had listened to that kind of sparked this whole thing. It was the Chris Williamson Modern Wisdom podcast, where he had interviewed Sean Stevenson, who recently came out with a book called Eat Smarter. But before I get into some of those details and the notes that I took from that podcast, I wanted to talk about what we do in our home.
Yeah.
When it comes to dinner. Dinner is really the one meal each day that we have to sit together to kind of reconnect, to talk about how our day went, things like that. And I want to talk about what it means to us and why it's really something that we've chosen to make a priority in our lives.
Yeah, it's definitely a priority in our lives. We're going to make the argument here, Tara's probably will do it better than me, that you should be trying to do this too. And maybe if you can't do it every day, maybe at least some days. It's that important, I believe. Before we get into it, two things. Chris Williamson's podcast, in case you don't know him, he's like one of the most popular podcasters in the world, but there is a chance you don't know him if you're a little bit older. I would say his audience is predominantly probably like 30-year-old males, Tower, right around
probably.
There.
Probably, although yeah. I'm a 45-year-old woman and I enjoy his podcast.
That's true.
His podcast is the one that I listen to pretty much weekly. His podcasts are very long. Sometimes they're 3 hours.
Yeah, they're three or 4 hours.
Yeah, I only listen to them when I'm in the car. But whenever I listen to them, I'm always learning something new.
Yeah, I've been listening to him for a long time. I remember when he was a smaller channel, and now he's like one of the biggest podcasters in the world, no doubt, making millions of dollars a year. And you know, he deserves it. He's put in so much effort into it. The research he brings to him, and I love his British, like calm British demeanor, and he lets the people talk, and
he's a really good listener.
Yes.
So he listens really well.
Which is really hard.
Based on that, asks really good questions.
It's so hard. Doing something like that, it's a skill that you have to build.
Definitely.
I mean, that's honestly why Joe Rogan is the most listened to podcast on the planet. You know, whether you like him or not, the guy knows how to just let the guest do the talking.
Yeah. That's why he's got them on, because they're the experts.
Yeah. Right?
Before we do that, do you want to talk about what we're going to end with?
Yes, I have to talk about what we're going to end with. Okay. That's my way of keeping you listening. It is those two beauties right there. So the one in back of Tara is pan au chocolat. Okay, you say it better, Tara.
I can't. I didn't take French in high school. You did.
Well, say it better. I know you want. You think?
No, okay. It's fine. All right.
So anyway, these are pan au chocolat from Costco. They're a product of France. They look to die for. And then the second one, also from Costco, is called...
Well, they're Les Petits Financiers. I would just say financier.
Yeah, they're mini... In other words, they also give you the English. They're mini almond cakes.
Yeah. How would you say financier?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, Les Petits.
And what are they? Maison, what's the brand?
Maison Jacques Mart.
So anyway, these two French beauties are from Costco. So it's a French theme taste test today. And, you know, I'm not that knowledgeable about the snacks in Costco. For all I know, these could have been there for 5 years, 10 years, they could be a bestseller, or they could be a test by Costco. Costco does that a lot. They test items, and then if they don't do well,
yeah,
then they get rid of them.
We don't usually buy snacks from Costco.
Yeah.
So for us doing these taste tests, we were kind of like kids in a candy store.
It's so much fun.
Looking for stuff that we've never tried.
And we have them all sitting downstairs in our on a shelf just for this podcast. So the kids have been berated to not open any of these because they can't have them until after we do the taste test. Yeah. Right. So it's almost like we're getting the good stuff, not for them, but for these taste tests.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So that'll be at the end of the episode. And, you know, just a little recap. Last week's episode was tiramisu from Costco. One was from Costo. The other one was from Uncle Giuseppe's. And wow, those results were not what I was expecting, Tara.
Me neither.
Yeah. I thought the one from Costco that was in these glass jars and looked beautiful and the packaging was great. Man, they were not good.
Very disappointing. I hope Costco does not let us down today with these French pastries. So more to come.
Yeah.
So Jim, why don't you tell our listeners what dinner means to you personally and share a little bit about what we do in our home at dinner time.
Yeah. Dinner has always been super important to me. Way before I decided to do any of this stuff for a living, we always wanted to have good dinners. And even before our kids were around, we would make good dinners just for the two of us. So yeah, right away, I don't want to make it like this has to be like you have to have kids to do this. Though I do think it's probably something that is more important if you do have kids, families. It's you know, if you're a single individual, you're going to have to do those Zoom calls, maybe like Tara was saying,
yeah, or you meet up with
some friends. Even meeting up with friends at a bar, like to have a burger, is great.
There's something about connecting with people you care about over food.
Yeah, yeah. So what does it mean to me? It means it's like one of the most important things to me. I would always make food, really try to do like the best job ever. And then test it on you, Tara. You know, this, again, this is before the kids were around. And honestly, when the kids were really young, they would just be like, it's good or it's bad. Or James, like, I don't like that. You know, that would be the extent of it.
Yeah.
Now I truly love eating the four of us eating together because there is a lot of back and forth. Like they'll give me really good criticism, which really improves my dishes. But more so than that, we get to talk. We get to have a time that's kind of devoid of tech. You know, we take that away. And a lot of these things Tara has tried to improve on, like the saying of grace.
Well, it's not just grace. It's really us each taking a turn, talking about the things that we are grateful for that happened during that day or things that we're grateful for that are to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so I enjoy
definitely
that
part of our dinner routine.
It's still tough for us though. I mean, realistically, it's not perfect. So sometimes the kids will fight. That's always tough to deal with. Mm-hmm. It's tough when you make a good meal and then your family fights. That's the reality that happens for everybody. Sometimes you make the perfect dish and they're doing something else. They're playing a video game. They're talking on the phone with their friends. They're making deals with selling their candy selling business, you know, in school. They're, you know.
Yeah, but even if they're doing that, they are expected to come down and sit at the table.
Yeah.
And that is their priority.
We don't have a firm time, so that kind of that makes it a little tougher for us. And I think that's more reflective of the year 2024 that we are so overworked.
It's
compared
just,
to when we were young.
I don't even think it's just being overworked. I think it's a lot of times we are beholden to the kids' schedules. So for example, you know, James for a while was doing basketball like two or three nights a week, and it was from 6 to 8 o'clock at night. So it was harder for us to eat all together, but we still did it.
Yeah.
We would just eat at like 8:30 when we got home. I want to back up and I want to talk about my own personal experience and what dinner means to me. And I think why it's something that I've chosen to prioritize above so many other things. First of all, when I was a kid, a lot of times my dad, I think he would work a little bit later. He worked in the same town that we lived in, but he was often at the office like 6, 7, maybe even 7 o'clock at night sometimes. So my mom would let us, my sister and I, eat dinner with trays. Do you remember those like trays on stands? I feel like that was like a 1980s kids thing.
Well, I had like a, it was like a table almost that would like, I can move towards the couch.
Yeah, we didn't have that. We had trays. So we would sit on the floor and my sister and I would watch Nickelodeon. Like we would watch The Monkees. Do you remember that show, The Monkees?
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
you were the Monkees.
Definitely.
Okay.
I used to watch that all the time, too.
We would watch that and like maybe a few other shows while we would eat dinner. And it wouldn't really be her and I talking, but we would still be bonding in a way because we would be. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit later, my parents separated. And I can't really remember after that happening ever sitting down and having a family dinner or like I remember just kind of eating more as individuals.
Yeah.
And I knew that something was lacking in my life. I just didn't really know what it was. And I think it wasn't until Jim and I started a family that I became obsessed almost with the idea of us all eating dinner together. So I would, when I was working in the city, I would often not get home until 7:15 is really when I would walk through the door. And you would always have dinner ready. Or if we were like ordering out or whatever, the food would definitely be there by the time I walked in the door. I would walk in, wash my hands, sit down, and we would eat. Even when the kids were little and they probably should have been like getting ready for bed, I said, no, this is a priority that we are eating together. So that's what we did. And that is what we continue to do. Now, I see it as a time for us to really connect with each other. Like you said, we kind of have a rule where the phone is not at the table.
I have to enforce that rule for myself.
You do. Often you're guilty of it.
That's what I'm saying. I have to put it away.
And a lot of times you do take out the phone and you record what we're eating. And sometimes
that's the thing too. I hate that I have to do that. And I do it for Instagram. Instagram is the stupidest platform ever. It really is. I mean, look, you know how I feel about TikTok. Well, here I go on Instagram. Well, I gotta show a story all the time when I'm eating. Like, you know,
you don't have to.
I know I don't have to.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't have to.
But I think earlier on, like when you first started Sip and Feast, it was a little bit more of a novelty and we didn't mind it. I think now that we are where we are, I think delaying us eating by taking time to like maybe video is maybe getting ruffling some feathers.
I think you're right. I mean, and look, I've tried to establish better boundaries with what I do. It's the simple reality, though, is that, you know, it's really tough to not, like, you kind of have to put yourself out there on social media. Can you just put out one YouTube video a week and have your blog, you know, your recipe blog and do okay? Maybe it's tough now. There's a lot of competition for eyeballs and a lot of those eyeballs live on Instagram and TikTok and they want to see what you're doing all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, you haven't put up a story in 3 days. What happened to you? Did you die? It's like, no, I just didn't put up a story. You know,
I know.
Sorry. You know, sometimes I'm not that interesting. You know, there's nothing. For, I didn't have anything to put up. Like honestly, yesterday's one, we did corned beef hash. So it was leftover corned beef from St. Paddy's Day. And I was, you know, corned beef hash is not the best looking thing in the world. You know, it looks good if you got like pile it up and you get some poached eggs on there, but just regular corned beef hash. And I filmed the story and I was just like, this is the most uninspiring story that I've ever Like, I was like, hey guys, it's, I got corned beef hash. I had leftover corned beef. Like, I made, here's my corned beef hash. Like, I was like all set to post it. Then I'm like, this is the worst. And I just hit delete. I just shouldn't be putting up stuff just to put it up is what I'm trying to say.
I agree. So going back to this, you know, sometimes technology does enter the dining room table or the kitchen table or wherever it is, but it's best if it's kind of left out, in my opinion.
I think you got to leave it out. And honestly, school systems in different states are starting to implement these rules. I believe Florida did something, but I also believe Britain has made it, like, they've banned phones in the schools.
Yeah, they said something in our school district about, like, not allowing phones during lunch or something like that. But, you know, thinking of schools in general too, like, I often wonder, since the fact that being able to break bread, eat with other people is something that's so important to creating social bonds. I really wonder how what happened, you know, in 2020 with the not letting kids eat with one another.
Oh, yeah.
How that impacts their social bonds. But I mean, that's
that was the worst.
That's a topic for
the worst. Okay.
That's a topic for a different.
Now you know how I feel. All right. There you go.
Like, that's a topic for a different.
They made, and let me tell you, there was huge backlash in the school district that we were in, and I think a lot of districts. But they essentially, these kids like missed like a couple, what was it, 2 years where they weren't allowed. They were sitting at a desk.
Yeah, eating lunch alone, and that's the time that they're supposed to be fostering these relationships. Yeah. So, I'm curious to see how that plays out with the generations that were most heavily impacted.
They believe the long term effect on those kids is yet to be determined, and they think it's going to be fairly bad. And again, did the ends justify the means? You know, going back to just the tech in general, I think that tech-free zones, and I say this as someone who just, we make all of our whole entire living is derived from tech, from the videos we post to these podcasts we record and to the photos we put on our website. I still believe, though, that there's tech in general is going to have a massive decline. I mean, they're talking about banning TikTok now, and this time it's for real. It's probably going to happen. Congress, like, there was like only 50 members that didn't vote for it. So it was bipartisan, which is unheard of these days. Now it's in the Senate's hands and the president said he's going to sign it. It's not going to do anything. People will just move back to Instagram or whatever other platform. But I do think that in the not too distant future, we're going to have tech-free zones. Like almost communities, I believe, or communes, I guess, where people are going to like opt into these to live a less of a tech oriented life. And I mean, again, I use this stuff to make a living, but I don't know. It's almost like, I feel like it was better without this stuff. And it's such a distraction now all the time. Mm-hmm. You're constantly at a state of distraction. You're not in harmony. You're in a state of disharmony. Mm-hmm. It's not the people creating the content. It's most of the time, it's more the consumers.
Yeah.
Because that's why they're swiping through TikTok so fast. They're just trying to land on that perfect 15 second of bliss. Fix. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's a forever thing. Then they look at the phone and they've been on it for 4 hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is like parents' battle, all of our battles. But forget about it. Even if you don't have kids, it's your own battle. Like, how long are you going to stay on it?
Yeah.
Take a look at your phone. See how long you've been on these apps for the whole entire week.
Well, you can set screen time limits for yourself, not just for your kids, if you have an Apple phone. I don't know about an Android device.
Yeah, but you still got to impose that on yourself.
Yeah, well, you can. Yeah, obviously, you can override it. But,
you know, all these tech CEOs, they don't let their kids use the products that they create.
Yeah.
They know.
Yeah.
They know how bad it is.
So I think saying all that, what we're about to talk about builds the case that maybe eating together as a family is even more important than it has been.
Yeah, it's
in the
only time you get in that tech-free zone.
It's the time. Let's kind of get into the topic here. I have my notes here. I am going to refer to them. I do not have this stuff completely memorized, although I have the general gist of it. But I did want to be able to talk and relay some of the information that Sean Stevenson shared in this podcast and even in his book. I did buy his book called Eat Smarter, and I've looked through it. He starts out with some of like the sciencey building the case, talks about different foods that are good for helping you wind down at the end of the day, helping you get ready for dinner, helping you get ready for sleep. And then he follows it up with a bunch of recipes in the book too.
Oh, so he has recipes on.
He has recipes.
Interesting.
Too. Yeah.
What
yeah.
a great idea.
It is really, like, really good. Again, the topic of the podcast was how to get a good night's sleep or something like that. It was titled. So he talks about the role that food plays in that. And a lot of what he said really, really resonated with me, especially when he talked about the fact that who we eat with has an impact on our diet and our health. Okay.
Uh-oh.
So he worded it that the evening routine, so coming together at the dinner table, is potentially the most powerful down regulator of the fight or flight system, which is the sympathetic nervous system. He said that a determining factor in how long we'll actually live, so our own personal life expectancy, has to do with creating relationships and having healthy social bonds. And that the healthier our social bonds are, that can lead to a reduction in mortality, okay? And the dinner table, the way he describes it, functions as the unifier that brings people together. It's essentially something that humans have been doing for millennia, and it's something that's ingrained in our DNA. It's something that, down to like the cellular level in our body, it's something that we expect to happen.
It's so important. It always makes me wonder why those people who don't aren't interested in food.
It's not just the
food. Are
they
food. Going the, against their biology?
They might be, but it's really the act of eating together, or they may have had trauma
yeah.
or other things that have maybe given them a negative association with dinner
yeah.
or a negative association
with
coming
together. Or maybe
they were overweight
and they have like an eating problem. So
yeah,
now
it
like,
could be a whole slew of different things
yeah.
for those individuals. But you know what I found most interesting is that when he talks about when we eat with the people that we care about, right? This is where it comes in, like the power of eating with loved ones. When we eat with people that we care about, we switch over from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system. Doing that switch helps our bodies to produce more oxytocin. Yeah. Oxytocin is like the love hormone. Like if you've ever hugged someone that you love and it just feels so good, it's because your body is creating oxytocin. Oxytocin is also a very important hormone when it comes to childbirth,
yeah.
breastfeeding, sex.
Yeah.
I know it's a family show.
I always think of oxytocin, and I always think of Pitocin.
Pitocin is the pharmaceutical
yeah.
form of
synthetic.
Oxytocin. That's used in labor induction.
Yeah, that's why I remember that.
Yeah, but oxytocin is the natural form of it, and it's something that we experience when we're with people that we love. And oxytocin is actually found to neutralize cortisol, which is the stress hormone. And oxytocin helps us to like experience that, what he keeps calling like a down regulation.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to read you, this is a direct quote from his book. He says, "For thousands of years, food centered around more than just the act of eating. Food was about family, about sharing and cooperation. Food was about celebration and community. We've quickly shifted from a species that prepared and ate food together to frequently eating in isolation with processed foods and mind-numbing media. What is the real impact of this shift in behavior? Did eating together help protect human health in some way?" So he goes on to cite a Harvard study that showed that people who eat dinner with their families consume more fruits and vegetables and less soda and processed foods. And eating together as a family increased consumption of fiber, calcium, folate, iron, B, C, and E vitamins, lowered the glycemic load, and lowered intake of trans fats. He talks about the benefits that eating together as a family has on children. He says eating three meals per week as the minimum with children leads to reduced incidence of eating disorders and obesity.
Hmm.
And he also talked about a study that was done on tech workers at IBM. They were tracked and found that regardless of their stress level at work, if they were able to make it home for dinner consistently, their stress level at work remained manageable and work productivity was high. But when something interfered with their ability to get home and eat dinner with their family, their stress levels went up and the morale and productivity went down.
It makes complete sense to me. I think when you miss those breaking bread moments, and I mean, sometimes that happens to me, you don't, it's hard for you to even pinpoint why you feel depressed and you're not, you know, you're in a state of disharmony, but that's what it is. Just the act of doing that, even though it might be stressful for you, maybe you do have a work assignment due or something, and or your kid has a late sporting event, but getting everybody together, yeah, that definitely, I feel it's hugely important.
Yeah.
But like, I never articulate it really. Yeah, you know when something's wrong.
Yeah. I think it's hard. When I used to like travel for work, I used to find it so difficult if I ordered room service in my room to sit there and eat by myself.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely felt like something was off. Something was not right. There is definitely something so powerful about eating with people that you love at the end of the day specifically. I think, you know, during the day, I'm guilty. The kids are at school. You say you practice intermittent fasting, but we all know that that's sometimes
not working.
That sometimes that doesn't happen.
It definitely is not working.
But like, you know, during, like, I'm good to go downstairs and eat something on my own, or if I'm in the car and like I eat something.
You're always grazing, I noticed. Like she's like, I got some nuts here. Oh, I got some of this snack. I got some of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like the other day, I believe it was the day we filmed the leg of lamb.
Oh yeah. I couldn't stop eating.
She told me about everything she ate that day. And I get it. I'm like filming the video. She's probably bored as heck, you know, Tara sits behind the camera and we have a mic on her so she can, you know, talk to me when I'm cooking. And it's only occasionally you'll hear her, but she was probably like, oh, he's so boring. I'm just going to eat this and I'm going to eat that and some more of this.
Yeah, I don't know why I was more like snacky than usual. But so for me, I think like during the day, if I eat alone, it's fine. But if I have to eat dinner alone, something is not right. Yeah. I have a hard time moving past that.
I believe it's more important to you because you lacked that for a number of years, you know, after your parents separated. I always had it. And it was, it was very important to my parents. But when you're young, when you're a kid, you don't realize it. You also don't really realize how some of your friends might not be engaging in that. Yeah. Like you don't really think about those kids that much. You tend to think, oh, I'm here with my parents. Well, everybody else has the same experience that I do, and they don't.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of those people that didn't have that experience, they don't even know what they're missing now, because they're practicing the same thing in their new marriage and stuff.
I think oftentimes the shows that we used to watch as kids, like the, you know, Growing Pains or whatever those shows were, they always depicted kind of like a family meal. So maybe that's why, like, I always, like, I would see that. Well, I'd be like, oh, someday I'm going to want that for my family.
That's a huge part of it. And it didn't really matter what you were watching back then, whatever type of family it was always pictured that way. Now you have a lot of, like, I don't know if you call it counterculture, but it's almost like the norm is trying to be depicted as that doesn't happen anymore. So that has an effect on people. You know, it's a chicken and the egg. Are people is people's habits making more of these shows, or are these shows influencing more how people act? But
yeah, I don't know.
I will say, like, I could definitely see, like, you know, you probably read an article by some writer in the Huffington Post or in, you know, BuzzFeed or Vice or whatever, just saying how it's so antiquated to sit at a table for people and to eat dinner as a family unit. You know, it's almost like it's kind of maybe made fun of a little bit. You know, it's definitely most shows are not depicting it like that anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mr. Stevenson thinks it's a good idea, and so does Mr. Jim and Mrs. Tower.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I'm not saying you have to every single night you have to cook a perfect meal. No, not at all. This applies to if you even get takeout. Like a lot of times when James was at basketball, if you weren't cooking, I was gone that whole time. We would pick up Chipotle because that was kind of near where his basketball was. And we would eat the Chipotle together. But it's just the act of eating together, I think,
that really helped. So my stomach started growling.
Sorry. It's the act of eating together that really helps start that wind down process. That makes complete sense. It helps you shift from the sympathetic fight or flight mode into that parasympathetic nervous system, where you start to feel more relaxed. Your heart rate starts to lower. In some cases, if there's fighting, your heart rate goes. No, I'm kidding. But
no, there's definitely some fighting in our house, kids.
Well, I mean, they're 15 and 12. They're competing. They're brother and sister.
And they're competing for time at the dinner table, like telling their stories.
So that's another thing that they mentioned that I didn't write down in my notes here, but the fact when kids feel seen, it helps with their self-confidence.
Yeah.
So even for a kid who doesn't feel that they get that type of validation in school during the day, which granted they're probably not because everybody's on their phones. If they're not getting that during the day, at least they know that they have a place at the dinner table where they can be seen, they can be heard, they can share how their day went, they can talk about things that they are grateful for, and it can kind of reset them and help them get back on the right track so that they can have a good night's sleep and they can have a better day the next day.
So it's funny, like, as you're saying it, I'm like shaking my head. Yes. It's all right. I mean, everything Tara is saying is right. Can you make an argument against this? Is there any reason not to try to have more of these family dinners? I would say no.
I mean, again, unless you're in a situation where you're in like an abusive type of situation, maybe you don't want to have dinner with the people you live with. But outside of that, I can't really see a case against it. I mean, I think it's always good to eat, whether it's your family or with your friends. Just being able to break bread with people and connect and talk about your day and to feel excited about the meal that you're going to eat, especially if you cooked the meal together, like you really took an active role in procuring that meal. It's a win-win.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, not everybody's got a perfect Brady Bunch existence like we do, you know, and it's a joke.
I wish we had Alice.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's a little hard if you haven't been doing it for a while. It's hard to get everybody on board. You know, it's hard to get the kids. It's hard to get maybe the husband, the wife to do it. So maybe baby steps, like try to get one day a week, then two, then, you know, and then maybe people start liking it and then you're doing it every day.
Yeah. In fact, we recently implemented something for our family, the family meeting. Do you want me to talk about this?
Yeah, family meeting. Well, this is brand new. So this is all Tara's idea.
So we don't know how this is going to work, but I felt that we needed to have some sort of a game plan for the week. The schedules are getting busier. There's more balls in the air to keep track of. So every Sunday, what we're going to be doing, we just had our first one, is we're going to have a family meeting. And what we're going to do in that meeting is we are going to talk about what is happening in the week to come. Who has what sports? Who has what tutor? What's happening on what night? If Jimmy and I are going out to dinner, which we will be going out to dinner this Thursday.
Can't wait. It's going to be the first time we do that.
Our quarterly date night.
Yeah.
What are the kids going to eat that night? It's really just kind of getting a calendar in place for the week to come. And then everybody gets to have a say in what's going to happen. And I find that helps me specifically as the person who's most responsible for running all of the logistics of the household. It helps me shop better, right? I can better prepare at the grocery store for whatever it is that we're going to eat. I'm often the one that's asked, what's for dinner? What are we doing tonight? What's this? What's that? Guess what? That family meeting we just had, the agenda or the calendar or whatever you want to call it, is on the fridge. So if there's any ambiguity or any questions about what we talked about that we're going to eat, it's right there. Oh, daddy's going to be making corned beef hash and taking pictures of it for the website. Corned beef hash is what's for dinner on Monday night. It's helpful and it helps people get involved and they know what to expect. I think it's a good thing. I hope it continues, but we'll see. We'll let you know how our experiment goes.
I think in order for it to work better, you got to get all the other stuff off the fridge because it gets buried in with all the magnets and everything else.
Of course you would have something to say like that.
Yeah. Well,
shall we move on to the taste test?
You'd never ask.
You seem a little cranky. You seem like you need a little snack.
Okay. So you can see we have the two of them right in front of us. I'm just going to read this one again. These are mini almond cakes and it's by Maison Jacquemart Fondue Anne, 1989. Made in France. Le Petit Financier. Oh, Amanda. Okay. So thankfully, because again, we bought these from Costco. They come in individual packs. So you want one each?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're only 110 calories.
Yeah. So we'll eat these and then we'll read the ingredients after.
Yeah. So we're going to start with this one first.
This is in a little individual pack. It's very tiny.
So they're soft. They have...
Oh, I can smell the almond.
They smell amazing.
They smell like almond.
Now, if you don't like almond, you're not going to think they smell amazing.
Let's see. Oh, cheers.
Yes.
It's very good. It's a little too sweet for me.
I think they're great.
Yeah, they are really good. It's like, this is going to sound weird. It's like almost like an oxymoron, but it's like, it's dense, but it's airy at the same time. Mm. Does that make sense?
They're like soaked. So mm-hmm. That's what it is.
I could see this going really well with an espresso or a cup of coffee.
I think they're really good. All right. So this is probably a New York thing in New York Costco's, but I might be wrong because it's imported by Vertuo Imports and that importer is located in Garden City, New York, which is in Nassau County, which is about 30 miles from here. But who knows? They might have these everywhere across the United States. That's the thing with Costco. In case you didn't know, our Costco will look different than your Costco. Like there's a lot more Italian ingredients here. Like we lived in Minnesota for 3 years and they didn't have as much.
We have a lot of Asian ingredients.
And then Minnesota had more Asian ingredients.
No, but here we're starting to because of Stony Brook University.
Oh, yeah. So now Costco's here have more Asian. But I actually remember in Minnesota they had some different stuff that they didn't have in Long Island.
The Hmong population was a large – there was like a large Hmong enclave in Minneapolis or St. Paul?
St. Paul, I believe.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm just going to read this. They're a typical French pastry, found its origin at the end of the 19th century. At that time, the pastry chef Lasna brought up to date small oval almond cakes called visitandines, whose recipe was based on almonds, flour, sugar, and butter. As his pastry shop is located near the Paris Stock Exchange, the pastry chef's main customers are financiers. Faced with the great success of his sweets, the pastry chef then decided to change the oval shape of the cake to a rectangular shape, giving it the appearance of a gold ingot in a nod to the customers. Thus was born the financier. So this is probably like a famous type of French pastry.
Yeah, you know what? There was actually, when I worked in World Financial Center, which is now Brookfield Place, on the second floor of that building, there was a French pastry shop called The Financier.
Stored room temperature, stay away from moisture, okay? Ingredients, cane sugar, egg white, butter, ground almonds, wheat, flour. So yeah, ground almonds. When you do ground almonds together, you're getting like an almond paste almost. That's kind of, these are good. These are good.
I knew sugar was up there though. So sugar is the first ingredient.
That's pretty much the first ingredient for anything like this.
Yeah, that's why I said it is very sweet. I would almost like it a little less sweet.
You want to give a rating to that one?
Why don't we rate it at the end?
We'll rate both of them at the end. Okay.
This one, do you want to read it?
Yeah.
Since you're the French expert.
Okay. Pain au chocolat. Right here?
Yep. And it's by La Boulangerie is the company. La Boulangerie. Boulangerie is a bakery in French? Is that correct?
Yes. It is. I took French.
Let me
read this over here. Okay. Can you,
you want to open it? Like it's like a Russian nesting doll.
They're still good. It's
like
still
multiple.
This is what's good about Costco. They're still individually wrapped.
Yeah.
So I think we should just split one here. I don't think I need to be.
Yeah. Split one.
I'm going to, you know,
open it.
They're 180 calories each.
Yeah. And these are a little bit bigger. So these look strangely similar to the
Cornetto.
Cake.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say these are better.
I really hope so. Okay, so I'm breaking it in half. It actually feels a lot like a brioche.
And it says enjoy your way. So you can probably heat these up in the oven, which is probably going to make them better.
It feels like brioche. It's kind of like has that squishy. Well, I'll tell you right off the bat, I'm wishing there was more chocolate. It's kind of light on the chocolate.
Not a big fan. Sorry to say. I was expecting a lot more based on this packaging. So this is by Le Boulanger, made with non-GMO ingredients. This mouth-watering puff pastry is delicately crafted with high-quality ingredients, including real eggs, chocolate, resulting in an incomparable flaky texture and rich taste. Once you have one, it'll be hard to stop. I still feel that these probably should be baked, even though it doesn't say on here.
Yeah. What does it say under Enjoy Your Way? What does it say there?
It says for Enjoy Your Way, your new favorite pastry is individually wrapped for on-the-go convenience. No matter where you are, you're always just a moment away from enjoying a delicious pain au chocolat from France. It doesn't tell you to put it in the oven.
So it's almost telling you that it's meant to be eaten on the go, like wherever you are. So it's not really saying you should warm it up.
I wonder if this is like a problem with us, because we didn't like those Cornettos either that were very similar to this.
Maybe we're the problem.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was better than the Cornetto, but I don't know. I could see it being I would pack it in like one of the kids' lunch boxes.
Yeah. I guess maybe if you want to give your kid something that's not as bad as maybe the stuff that's made in the United States.
Twinkie.
There's a lot of ingredients here, but you know, it says no GMO, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no high fructose corn syrup. Okay. Let's rate them. Okay. Let's rate this one first because we just had this one. Okay. 0 to 10. What does it get, Tara?
I'm going to give it a 6 because it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It really wasn't. I wish there was more of the chocolate filling. I didn't really get a whole lot of chocolate flavor. And I would feel probably okay about giving it to the kids.
Yeah, I agree with Tara's sentiment. I'll give it a 5. It's better than the Cornetto packaged that we had a few weeks ago. But nowhere near as good as this almond cake. So let's talk about the almond ones. What does that get, Tara?
I'm going to give the almond cake an 8. I thought it was really good. I thought it would be even better if I had it with an espresso. I thought the texture was good. I just, for me, I found it a little too sweet.
I really liked it. I don't think they're overly sweet, though they are sweet. I think almond flour in general, is sweet.
Almond flour is just ground almonds.
Well, but almond flour, you're mixing it normally, not almond flour, I'm sorry, like an almond dessert like that.
Yeah.
You're normally mixing it with a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
We just made almond cookies.
Yeah, that's kind of what it
That's what it reminded
like.
Me of.
Yeah.
I made a Sicilian almond cookie a few months ago. I forget the name of it. Maybe they're just called Sicilian cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to give this one an 8 as well. I liked it. I thought they're good. They're really good. That being said, these aren't bad. I guess I'm a little disappointed that we have 15 more of these things here and got to figure out something to do with them. Maybe. But those will go. These are going to go.
Yeah, those are really good.
Yeah. Okay, so I do enjoy those taste tests, and I hope you do as well. If you want different ones, maybe completely different direction, I prefer not to do desserts every week because I will become 300 pounds. I have no problem doing a lot of savory stuff, and I actually like the idea of the hot peppers and stuff like that too. We just went to Uncle Giuseppe's recently, maybe a month ago actually, and we picked up those sodas we got. The Manhattan special. Yep. And when we were down that aisle, it's like the best aisle in the store. It has just all of the jarred stuff from Italy, mostly from Italy, Manhattan specials from New York. But I mean, I could do taste tests from there for eternity, mm-hmm. like doing two or three an episode. I mean, there's like 9,000 items in those aisles.
There's so much.
I mean, I don't know how Tara feels about doing anchovy taste tests here and stuff like that, but
I would do the anchovy taste test. I think Uncle Bob suggested we do a baby clam taste test.
It's so hard to tell with the baby clams. I just feel like they all kind of taste the same. They're all like a little rubbery and just like not that much flavor in them. It's more of a texture thing, I think, when you cook with them versus cooking with fresh clams.
I think doing a blind taste test for the tuna, like the tuna and olive oil.
That would be good.
Maybe doing like a higher end one and trying to see which one we like better.
That's because not a bad
some
idea.
Of them are very expensive.
Very expensive. They can get up to about $30.
Yeah. So I think like if we taste tested an expensive one, a moderately priced one, and maybe like the one that they sell in Costco, I think it's Genoa. Which that one is not bad, but I would be curious to see how that stacks up against one of the more expensive brands. Like, yeah. I think Ortiz is one of the more expensive.
Ortiz isn't really that expensive. Ortiz is considered very high quality. Ortiz is actually a Spanish. It's not an Italian brand, but they have like really good distribution. So you'll see them in all different specialty places.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're considered high quality.
Yeah. But maybe we should do that and kind of counteract like all the sweets we've been taste testing.
It's not a bad idea.
Jim, the first question comes from Hannah, depending on how you pronounce it, or Hannah. Which of your recipes freeze the best for freezer meals? I typically do one big freezer meal cooking day every 2 to 3 months and stock my upright freezer with 20 to 30 freezer meals, usually 5 to 6 recipes used. Which of your recipes do you recommend for my next freezer meal cooking day? First of all, that sounds like a great idea.
It does.
That's like you do like a cooking frenzy and then you just freeze it all.
I wish I could be that organized.
I know. I mean,
it wouldn't really work for us anyway with how I got to keep making content. So thanks for the question, Hannah. I think that anything that tastes better when it's overnight. So, I mean, it could be beef bourguignon. It could be chili. It could be the short rib ragu. Just don't cook the pasta, just freeze the ragu portion. It could be anything like that. Now, you can also freeze baked pastas really easily. You can just not bake it and then just set it up, put it in the freezer. I would use disposable metal trays, which I use often. You could do lasagna that way too. Eggplant parm will work. There's a lot of different things you can do that... Right there, the few that I just said will give massive returns. Also, all soups, any type of soup is better when it's frozen than when it's made fresh. They just taste better. So it's not just chili, it's just anything like that. Poposo is a stew. Certain things that aren't as good to do would be where texture is an issue. So I think, though you can freeze chicken marsala and piccata and stuff like that, it's better not to.
Yeah.
But it's not horrible either. I mean, a lot of places do.
I would say anything with cream too. Like
yeah, you cream would break.
Freeze like a cream sauce. Although I think you could freeze, like you said, like a baked pasta, like a macaroni and cheese or
that's
things
fine.
Like that. Yeah, like you wouldn't freeze fettuccine Alfredo.
No, anything like that can't be and you'll notice this when you go out to eat and you get a cream sauce and you bring it home and then the next day when you reheat it in the microwave, it's like liquidy. It's because the emulsion broke. So you can, at that point, it's kind of like silly. I mean, unless you have like a lot left over, but you could put it in a pan, you could put more butter in, you can re-emulsify it and a little cream, whatever, it'll come back together. But I mean, do you have anything that I missed there, Tom?
I would say a big pot of Sunday sauce.
Yeah.
With meatballs. And you can freeze the meatballs separately into different portions, and you can use it for different things. So you can use it for pasta with meatballs. You could use it for a meatball hero. And then you can use the Sunday sauce for whenever you're in the mood for pasta.
I think Tara is 100% right about the Sunday sauce. You can make so many meals with that. So I would make a huge amount of it. And I would probably portion it. So portion it in like maybe 2-quart containers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what else is a good thing to freeze? Pesto.
Pesto.
So you can freeze it in an ice cube tray. And then you just pop out the cubes as you need it, because you don't really need a lot of pesto because you're going to be mixing it with pasta water.
For a pound of pasta, depending on how big the cubes are, maybe you need like 3 cubes worth.
Yeah.
You could also do other types of pesto too. Walnut pesto, sun-dried tomato, artichoke pesto, lots of different ones.
Yeah.
I hope those gave you some good ideas, Hannah.
Other good things to freeze, not like meal related, but if you want to make like zucchini bread or banana bread or things like that, and you have space in your freezer, make like a bunch of loaves.
Any cakes or breads like that. Freeze fine. Pizza dough too. Pizza dough, I know I've spoken about this in the past, but if you want to make a lot of pizza, so do your balls, ball your dough, put them on a sheet pan. So say you have a half sheet, you could probably fit 4 of them on there, because what's going to happen is they're going to start to spread out a little bit, but take them, put it into your freezer. So you need enough room in the freezer. Then after a few hours, when they're hard, take them out. Now take those balls, and then you could put them in plastic bags and then label them. And now they won't change shape anymore. Now, if you want like more of that cold fermented flavor, just do your cold ferment one night overnight. Then you just put them, same thing, on the sheet pan, then freeze them. And you could, people who are really pizza addicts will do like 50 of them this way. Like say you got a pizza oven outside and you're really into pizza during the summer. You just have like a little fridge out there just filled with all your dough balls. Like your dough balls, your sauce, your cheese. That's all you need.
Yeah. Sounds good. I want pizza now.
I want a pizza oven. I think I'm going to do the uni this year.
That would be fun.
I think it'll be good for a video too.
I think so too.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for the next question?
Yes, I am.
It's a video question.
Nice.
From Uncle Bob.
Well, Uncle Bob, thank you for keep doing the videos. I don't know if anybody else is going to do a video one, but Uncle Bob is a pro at it now.
We love the video questions. Okay, so let's play Uncle Bob's video question.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Tara. After going through a bunch of your recipes on the sipandfeast.com website and also your videos, I couldn't find anywhere you make or use any fresh pasta. And I was wondering if there's a reason for that, and if you have made and used fresh pasta, do you think it's worth the extra effort to make your own fresh pasta? Thanks.
I love Bob.
Yeah, it's a good question, Bob. And we have received this from a few people. So there will be fresh pasta recipes on the site. It's a big, I'm being 100% honest now. I don't make a lot of fresh pasta, though I've made fresh pasta numerous times in my life. I don't think it's worth it to the average home cook. Most sauces, especially if you're talking Southern Italian food, which is the food that I make, and it's the food that pretty much everybody eats here in New York, they don't use a lot. They don't make a lot of fresh pastas. Like everybody who came here from Italy, they call it macaroni, and it's always dried. They're not making, like my grandmother, she never made fresh pasta, okay? Maybe she made it a couple times. And that's a common experience for people like of that persuasion who, you know, were in the 5 boroughs, they moved out to Long Island. It's just how it is. That's why all the restaurants reflected that too. Now you're starting to see restaurants change a little bit because they're bringing in some more Northern Italian influences, which is more heavy on the fresh pasta. Okay. Now, am I going to do it? The answer is yes. Do I really want to do a lot of it? The answer is no. It will take a lot of effort on my part, and it won't get that many people looking at it, because most people are going to look at it and go, oh, I don't want to do all this. You know, when I can just buy a really, first of all, you could buy good fresh pasta now. So, but even say you want to make, say you want to make pappardelle, is it going to be substantially better than one of the 10 brands you can buy at your local Italian, you know, mart, you know, pork store, whatever? Probably not. Now, if you want to get into more exquisite things, more intricate things like homemade tortellini, ravioli, there I think is where you're going to get a lot bigger improvement than anything you can buy packaged. Like this place Trattoria that we always talk about, he made this a few times. It was there when we went there. It was a short rib, so he braised short ribs and probably like with wine or whatever, took the meat off, shredded it all. Then he put it in fresh ravioli. So to do ravioli properly, really thin sheets you need to do it. And it was just superb. You're not going to buy anything like that. Not that I know of in a store.
Yeah. I would say if you're going to make homemade pasta, I would do it for, like you say, ravioli. The one thing that we do have on the site that I do think is worth it is homemade gnocchi.
Yeah.
Because
that's a big difference.
I think there's a massive difference between homemade and store-bought. The store-bought is very dense and too heavy, whereas if you make homemade gnocchi, they're very light and pillowy and just exquisite.
And by the way, the whole what I said about the pizza dough before, that's the same way you would store your gnocchi. So you make a batch of it, make like 8 pounds. Okay, the whole day. Take a whole day. Take a table, like if you got a table this big, have people help. Make them all. Put a little bit of corn. You can put cornmeal on parchment paper lined sheets, or just even flour, regular flour, the flour that you're using to make your gnocchi. And then just put them all on there, get them in the freezer for an hour. When they're really hardened up, then put them in your plastic bags, weigh those plastic bags. So then you can have 8 pounds. So each one's a pound. So ready to go for meals. Again, I don't want to be really crapping on fresh pasta, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, people, they just, first of all, our audience who is like predominantly in this New York area, like based on all the traffic we get on our website, which is like 2 million page views a month. There's like 15% of that traffic is from New York, New Jersey area, which is nuts. And, you know, those people, they're not a really big consumer of the fresh pasta. So anyway, that's kind of it on the fresh pasta. I don't want to discourage it, and I am going to make it. I actually have considered bringing in a fresh pasta expert and just having them make like 15 recipes for us. We'll put them on the site. They'll get the credit. Like it'll be like by them. Okay. I think that would be better because I think that they're going to do a better job than I am of showing the intricacies of it.
So if you have someone in your family who is like, it's almost like a bucket list item where they're like, I've always wanted to make fresh pasta. I would say that the fresh pasta shouldn't be the end. It should be the means to the end. The end being making some really good family memories with someone who's maybe always wanted to do it. So, or if you have kids who are like, I want to learn how to make fresh pasta. It's fun while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Is the juice worth the squeeze? No. If you're considering
there are a couple that are worth it.
Yeah, but if you're considering the end goal to be just eating the fresh pasta, no. But if you're looking at it from, you know, like zooming out and being like, all right, we're not just making pasta here. We're like making memories. Then I say go for it.
Yeah.
And that ties into what this whole episode is about.
It's a good point. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, I have all the tools. I got the attachments for the KitchenAid. I have the traditional hand crank. I have all the cutters, all of it. I mean, I've done it, you know, a decent amount. One thing I don't have that I've always wanted to get was the Cavatelle maker. So it's a machine that just makes cavatelli. And that's a nice pasta. That pasta is obviously, it is a fresh pasta. I mean, you don't buy dried cavatelle. One other one that's good, but it's not it's like a more like a semolina is to make, you can do this on a board, piece of plywood, whatever. You can make a pasta board if you like, and you can do orecchiette. So that's another one to do. And that's very simple. You know, you just twist in your thumb, or you could just use a butter knife, the edge of a butter knife to do it. So that's pretty much it for today. Hope that it answered your question, Bob. Everyone, if you want to leave a question, it's podcast@sippinfeast.com. Also, if you like these taste tests, which it's very apparent that the two of us love them, and you have specific things you want us to try, leave it in the comments or send us an email again to podcast@sippinfeast.com. Tara, you have anything to add?
I don't think so. Thank you for listening and keep sending us your questions. We enjoy them, and send us a video every now and again.
Yeah, I like the videos.
Yep.
You could do it on Instagram as well. Until next time.